Hi, this is Bonnie Vent, and you're listening to the Para-X Radio Network.
Hi, this is Barney Fitzgerald from GHI, and you're listening to the Para-X Radio Network.
The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Between the seen and the unseen. Between the known and the unknown. Between the real and the imagined. That's where you'll find the paranormal divide. Now, here is your host, Kurt Smith.
It's Monday, June 2nd. Welcome, everyone, to Para-X Radio. This is the Paranormal Divide with Kurt Smith. Man, do we have a great show tonight. We're going to have an awesome one. We have John Amerine, a.k.a. Jamkey, who is a Waverly historian. And we're also going to have someone special co-hosting tonight. I'd like to introduce my one and only brother Tommy from Caps Paranormal Radio. He will be on with me tonight too. Tommy, are you there?
Now I'm here. Now, can you hear me?
Tommy has made it with us tonight. How you doing tonight, Tommy?
I'm doing wonderful. I am just speechless. I can't believe that actually worked, but knock on wood.
We're trying new things here at Para-X Radio, and it seemed like it went smooth, the transition. It was awesome.
The minute I called you, the sound file went. I was just amazed. It perfect. Perfection.
The click of the buttons.
That was all yours. I had nothing to do with that. That was you.
It was good coaching, though. I was taught by the best. Now, we're going to have a good show tonight. We're going to have someone in here from Waverly. He's going to... The ins and outs. If anyone in the chat room has any questions, feel free to type them. Preferably PM me, that way I don't miss anything, because sometimes we know how the chat room goes. It just goes and goes and goes, and I miss it, and I don't want to miss anyone's questions. And if I'm right, we can go past 9 o'clock if needed, if more time is needed, and that's okay with our guest. We can do that, too. And right now we're going to try to bring in our guest. It's John Amerine. We're doing something new here on the divide. We're going to bring him in.
If it goes as smooth as this other thing, I'll be just utterly amazed. But Kurt actually showed me something on this. Hope to goodness it works.
It will work, I promise.
All right.
And due to special
Para-X.
Now trying to connect.
Well, that'll work, please, huh? Technology, I love it.
Please wait.
Uh-huh. The Para-X wizard, Marla said.
Connecting.
Bless her heart. Wait. And we're connecting.
Connecting. Please wait.
Connecting. Please wait.
Hello?
Hey.
John.
Hey. I'm here.
How's it going, John?
Doing good.
Cool. Everyone, this is we're bringing in John Amerine. He's a Waverly researcher. So let's give him a big Para-X welcome to the Paranormal Divide tonight. And if you could, John, if you could just give us a little background about yourself before we get into asking billions and billions of questions, because I'm sure lots of people have lots of questions about Waverly.
I got involved in Waverly about 6 years ago. Started helping with security and coordinating the volunteer cleanups, and that turned into, through me researching, the owners eventually named me at one point their chief historian, and I gave the first historical tours. Now, don't get me wrong, they had ghost tours before that based on the legends, but I gave the first historical tours that were meant to be during the evening time when you could have some daylight and see what's going on. Of course, I covered information about the paranormal, too, but I kept everything fact-based.
Cool.
Excellent. Now, why Waverly? What interested you so much about Waverly?
Actually, the legends are what got me into it in the first place. back at the time they had MTV Fear, and I've always loved scary places. Love being places that everyone else wanted to avoid. So I thought that staying a weekend someplace like that and doing some dares would be an easy $5,000. I wanted to suggest that they do the old haunted hospital in Louisville, which is all I knew about it, so I could try to get on the show. I figured I'd better research the place so I know a little bit of something to send to MTV to suggest it. And while I was researching it, we found that they had a volunteer cleanup, and it was the second ever volunteer cleanup that they had up there, and we went up for that and helped scrape paint off the walls and graffiti up at 502, and it just snowballed from there. I was hooked.
Cool.
Oh, that is awesome. Pardon me, if I sound a little scratchy, I do have a kind of a sore throat. I apologize for that.
Tell us what happened today, Kurt. You know, it's all right.
What happened today?
Yeah, you told me. Never mind, go ahead. That's
totally. I'm out of it tonight. Unfortunately, we did have the passing away of Bo Diddley and Yves Saint Laurent.
I know that one did, but oh well.
John, now, do you have a website that everyone can, you can direct anyone to that, when, what you're referencing to when we get into some of the historical information about Waverly?
I'm working on a database where I plan on having a lot of the factual information. In fact, I'm going to have all the documentation on there eventually. I started the original memorial site to former patients and staff. I'll go ahead and post a link of that into the room right now. There's a link to the new memorial site. I helped to take care of that. Also got the start of Bare Bones database, where I'm going to eventually have some of the, well, I plan on eventually having all of the death certificates. We have over 3,700 death certificates now.
Wow. Now with those death certificates that you received, are you actually posting them online for people to view, or are they, are you just putting like information, and if people want to contact you, they can get a hold of you?
I plan on having all of the death certificates online.
Cool.
It's going to take a while to get everything on there. And as you surf through that second link that I posted on there, through Roots Web, I have authorization for unlimited space since it's genealogical value and historical value. And you'll see that I have some of the death certificates already posted on there. Eventually we'll have them all.
Cool.
I have visited the site, and it's pretty awesome. It seems like it'd be pretty time consuming. Does it? Now, how difficult is it to when you're trying to track down death certificates? I guess you have to go through the state. What actually happens when you're actually obtaining a death certificate?
In Kentucky, we're lucky that there's a lot of genealogy that's taken on here, and in fact, I believe the GenWeb project started in Kentucky. I'm not 100% positive on that. So with that, they have access, public access to a lot of the death certificates. And we found after a while of researching that the main public library downtown Louisville has all of the death certificates. I believe it's from 1911 through 52, or maybe it was 51, on microfilm. And you could pull it up, look through the microfilm.
Wow.
And we actually went, and my wife, myself, and a friend, Pam Brooks, would go and spend a whole day on different microfilm machines going through looking for death certificates for certain years. And it would take every bit of a day with all three of us working to go through a year or a majority of a year.
Now, are you doing this because... there's some people out there are going to say, are you getting paid? Are you doing this because you want to... What's your drive behind this? Is it for information for people out there to understand what happened at Waverly?
Yeah, I really didn't know why I was hooked on Waverly for a long time. After I got involved up there, it was the first anniversary after the September 11th attack that I realized that the people that worked there were the same kind of heroes that ran up the hill. Ran up the stairs in the World Trade Center. They lived on the grounds because they were being exposed every day to the white plague. They risked their lives to save strangers, and I have the utmost respect for them and the history of the place. That's why I started the memorial site. And the death certificates was a way that we were finding new names to add to the memorial site.
Wow.
That's awesome. Now, have you had, have you had family members of the deceased from Waverly actually contact you? Has that happened?
Absolutely. In fact, before we started getting death certificates, we had some information from the census reports, and I was contacted by a descendant of the Thornberry family, and she thought that there was a mistake because she saw her grandfather's name as being an orderly there in, on the year that he was born, so he couldn't have been an employee there. We got to looking into it together, and we eventually found out that she had a great uncle by that name, that her grandfather was named after his uncle. And part of the land that Waverly is on was bought from the Thornberry family. The old Thornberry farm was on the corner across Dixie, where the Thorntons is right now. And mm-hmm. most of their family lived or worked at Waverly as well.
Cool.
That's awesome.
Now, I've got a quick question. You mentioned the historical tours a while ago. When you were doing the historical tours, did anything paranormal ever happen during those?
I've definitely run into plenty of things that I can't explain. The shadow figures, a majority of those, I'll say, it's got to be optical illusion. You're in a dark hall with very little light at the end. Your eyes are going to play tricks on you. But I've seen very distinct figures in the hallway, turn on the flashlight, and there's nobody there. So definitely can't explain all of them away like that.
Right.
Doors slamming, different sounds. Definitely came across some encounters, and everybody was aware of that. They just wanted to know that they were getting more of a fact-based tour and have it. I love doing it at the evening time. My favorite tour was always when we get to the rooftop at sunset, so you can look out at the distance and see the sun setting. It's a beautiful view from the roof.
Wow.
From the fifth floor. Now, that leads into a question. You said you've seen, you know, apparitions, some things that are unexplained. We always get this question from Casper Blaine, and I have to ask it for him. I believe it's 218 straight shows. he wants to know what your favorite EVP that you caught at Waverly is.
I've heard several of them, and the only one that I've actually caught myself, and it was really pretty interesting, was the first day we went there, when we were there for the cleanup. We took a tour. Tom Schwartz was giving us a tour around the place after we'd cleaned up for the most of the day. And we went into 423, the infamous glowing room on the fourth floor right at the curve.
Mm-hmm.
We went into there, and he was telling us about some different stories, legends about what had happened in there. And a friend of mine was carrying our recorder for us. I was taking pictures. And we all left the room. He was the last one in the room. You can hear everyone going down the hall, getting farther away. And then the woman in front of him walked out the door, and you could hear her say, "It always freaks me out when..." And it was kind of mumbled, muffled after that. You couldn't really tell what she said. But just as he was walking out the door, the last person out the room, you hear, "Ch-ch-ch." What was that? And we just, maybe he bumped it or didn't know what it was. We listened to it several times just out of curiosity that night. I put it on half speed. Mm-hmm. And why it's on half speed, I don't know. But it's a whisper, plain as day, says, "Where did you go?" Just as the last person was leaving the room.
Wow.
That's awesome. That is great. I mean, I've been to Waverly a couple of my times myself, and it seems like it's an EVP heaven there. I haven't seen an apparition personally, but I'm sure that eventually, the way it sounds, I will.
Right.
But let's get into some cool stuff about Waverly. You know, everyone, you know, you the biggest legend is, you know, you see it on TV, you see it on the internet, is the old 63,000 dead souls. Now, can you give us a little background on how that legend came about and how it can be disproved?
I'm actually not sure where the number came from. It just kind of showed up. And it was around the time that I was still giving the tours. It's the first time I heard it, but I heard it from several different sources. And that's kind of what everybody went by for a long time. But through researching, looking through the different legends, like with the 502, people saying that the suicide happened in 1928. So we looked up all the death certificates for 1928 and got 88 death certificates. That wasn't adding up with the legends. So later on we got 1932, and for a long time we only had 91 death certificates for that year, which again wasn't adding up. It was looking like it was going to be more like 100 people per year. Well, now we have 33 and a half years worth of death certificates, and we're still coming out with an average of about 107 deaths per year.
Wow.
What's the total count that you have calculated so far with your personal research at Waverly?
At this time, in my database, we have 3,836 death certificates.
Wow. Now, what time frame was that over?
Let's see, we have 1911 through 1916, and then we have everything from 1927 through 1953, which is the last ones that are available. As I was saying before, we could get them on microfilm at the library, but
right.
Recently they added it to the database for Ancestry.com. If you have a membership for Ancestry, you can look up any death certificates from 1911 through 1953.
Now let me
the state of Kentucky.
Let me ask you a million-dollar question, and you might not be able to answer this. I know I can't. back then, when it first started, do you think they kept that good of records on the deaths?
I don't doubt that they might have missed some. In fact, we've come across places where I'm very detail-oriented in this, and I break everything down by how many per month. I keep track of how many whites versus black, and I look for any kind of holes. And we found a few here and there, so I have no doubt that some of them have been missed at some point or another. That's why my figures I'm showing it's going to be probably right around 5,000, maybe as much as 5,500 deaths.
Right.
I estimate about 6,000. That's kind of leaving a leeway for any that we might have missed. And another thing that we do to try to counteract that possibility is we look not just for things that say that they died at Waverly Hills. We look for, if it says Waverly Hills anywhere on it, we look for staff members, from known staff members to be the doctors who signed it, possibly. And we have several that Waverly is nowhere on there, but it's a known staff member that signed it, so we kept it. It's a possibility that it was a former patient that went home and died. But I'd rather have that name included for the possibility that it could have been a Waverly death than to exclude it just because of possible human error.
Right. Now I've got another quick question. And
Where
we're talking about death certificates, have you ever come across one with a first name of Timmy for a small boy?
I would have to go through and look. I don't have them broken down by first name. I have them alphabetized by the last name.
Okay.
But I could go through and look and see with the ones that we have added to our database.
I just want to see if that was an urban legend or an actual a child who had passed away there.
Actually, I have some doubts about that, because to my knowledge, other than a short period of about a year when small children that were too young to go to school were housed on the fifth floor, other than that, no children were housed in the building. They were in a separate building that had an attached schoolhouse.
Right.
Was the attached school building, I guess it's no longer there, is it?
No, that's long gone. It's back in the area where the paintball fields were for a while. Pavilion buildings were over there. I could easily show you on a map. In fact, I have a picture of the inside of the schoolhouse.
Now, you said that the kids were on the fifth floor. Is that right?
There were small children, infants, on the fifth floor if they were too young for school age.
Okay. Because I vaguely remember, now correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember seemed like a swing set up there or something. It might be a different building, though, that I'm thinking of.
Well, there
no, they did have one on the roof.
Okay. Okay.
The maps that we have, they labeled a swing set on there.
Okay.
Absolutely, yeah. They used the fifth floor as the small children's dorm for a short while, maybe a year or two. And then the legends, when I first got involved, were that the fifth floor was the mental ward, and that the nurse was raped and killed by a mental patient until I proved that there weren't mental patients there. In fact, Waverly Hills isn't designed for mental patients that are dangerous. They have had a TV ward at Central State Mental Hospital, not a mental ward at the TV hospital.
Now, the Central State Hospital you're talking about, is that the one in Indianapolis, or is that there in Jefferson
it's
County,
too? It used to be in Louisville.
Okay.
Now, if we can, John, let's just start, if we can go floor by floor, if there's any legends. I mean, we mentioned the fifth floor with the nurse being hung there. That seems like to be a very popular legend. Now, how true is that? If it's not true, how is it not true? Just so listeners know the actual truth of what's up with the fifth floor.
Well, I can't say definitively. The trick is I can find a death certificate that proves that somebody died, maybe not exactly where, but there's no certificate that says that nobody died in a certain room. And even with my estimates of 5,000 to 6,000 people dying at Waverly, it's safe to say somebody's died in just about every room there. Mm-hmm. But that was a patient's bathroom, not a nurse's station. The story changes time after time. The reason for it, how it happened, it's changed so many times. One thing that's very consistent about it is they say that she was hung from the pipe above the doorway there in the 20s or early 30s. That pipe is part of the sprinkler system that wasn't installed till the 70s. So there's a lot of holes in the story. Not saying that there's not something that happened, that it's loosely been changed over the years. I'm sure you tried it in school before where the teacher whispers something to the person in the corner and they pass it on. By the time it gets to the back of the room, it's a whole different story.
Right.
There might very well be a small grain of truth somewhere in there, but I think it's so lost to time that nobody really knows exactly what happened, and everything that's circulating now is pretty much legend.
Right. I've been to Waverly. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Tom. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. I was going to say that I've been to Waverly 8 or 10 times, probably more than that, and I just never did feel anything in 502. It just didn't really, I guess, send the hair up on the back of your neck type feeling.
Yeah, I guess what you call it, the shit-o-meter didn't go off.
Exactly.
I didn't really sense anything up there. I didn't feel anything that something really happened up there.
The only thing that I got close on it was that picture I took during Waverly Experience of the shadow person looking thing in the doorway. That's the only thing. Right. And I think that Kelly also had the ball move up there on them, didn't they, Kurt?
Yes, that was. Yeah. I believe that was in the second floor. Wasn't that in the second floor children's auditorium? As they say now.
They had the ball in there and it moved like 4 inches. They didn't have it on camera, but when Kelly went up to the fifth floor herself and her husband Bruce, I think they placed the ball out there near where that picture was taken at of the shadow type figure. And when they came back, it was all the way around on the other side. That's pretty weird. But other than that, that's the only thing I've ever seen come out of the fifth floor.
I mean, you have the Taps episodes. What did you think, John, what did you think when Taps visited Waverly Hills?
I tried so hard to get a hold of them to let them know some of the facts behind the legends. They're really hard guys to get a hold of.
Yes, they are.
Yes, they are.
In fact, I miss a lot of the live show because I was trying to get into one of the many chat rooms that were all full.
Now, it seems like, you know, that's where the Timmy legend came out of. It seems like that's where it's gotten a lot of hype is from the first Taps episode.
And then I heard that the name Timmy was not the correct name, that it was Peter. I've heard that somewhere on the internet floating around, so who knows?
Well, not too long ago, it was Mary. Well, some people say it's a different one, but the Mary Lee story started out as a self-proclaimed psychic came and said that she was being drawn to the place. After she lied to get access to the building, she said that the reason she did so is because she was being drawn to the place by the spirit of somebody, and she pulled some pictures out of the wall that were in perfect condition in a building with the roof leaking and nothing would possibly be in perfect condition, and said that it was Mary Lee, which the picture was, one of the pictures was a woman looked like in her possibly early 20s that said, "Love, Mary Lee." That somehow changed into a school-aged girl running around playing ball, kind of morphing into the whole Timmy/Tommy story. And then once they came up for the Spooked and the Death Tunnel movie, it became the girl with no eyes. So the stories morph and change over the years.
Okay. Now, is there any myths or legends that about the fourth floor? What can you tell our listeners about the fourth floor? I know you mentioned room 423.
Mm-hmm. 423 is at the bend where the east wing meets the central section. That room itself was a small dining room. Patients, when they first were treated for tuberculosis, they were stuck in bed. In fact, if they had it real bad cases, they couldn't even feed themselves. The nurses would have to feed them. As they got better in their recovery, they would get out of bed for one meal a day. That's why they had small dinettes in each wing. Mm-hmm. That room right at the bend, on each bend, going to the east wing and the west wing on each floor, was a dining room, and the room right next to it is where they kept the food that they brought up in carts from the kitchen. That's what that room was. Next to it was a treatment room, but a lot of people have misstated 423 as a treatment room of some kind. There's been plenty of legends about that room. Supposedly a fluorescent light fixture broke loose from the ceiling and hit somebody in the head, but if you look at the ceiling, you can see that there was never a fluorescent light fixture there. Right. In fact, it still has the old incandescent fixture, which they removed on all of the rooms that they put the fluorescent lights into. Just lots of legends. Now, going down farther on that hall, going into the east wing, when you get to the double doors in the hallway, that was the beginning of the surgery wing. I'm sure there would have been a lot of deaths in that area. People, right after surgery, right. The operating room's down there at the end of the hall, right next to the elevator. And that's, a lot of people say that that's one of the areas that they get the most feeling, one of the hot spots.
Do you know what type of surgeries went on there?
Oh, absolutely. They had the artificial pneumothorax, where they would put a needle between the ribs and pump air into the chest to collapse a lung. That wouldn't have even been done in the main operating room. They had the treatment rooms, like I said, that was close to the dinettes. In fact, there was a room down on the first floor across from X-ray where they did it on an outpatient basis. It was so successful. But some of the surgeries that they would have done and the main operating room on the fourth floor were thoracoplasty, where they would remove ribs and use the chest muscles to permanently collapse a lung if it was too far gone to save. And then later, when they realized that if it's too far gone to save, it's better to take it out, they started the lobectomy and pneumonectomy, taking out part of or a whole lung, which that's still used in cancer treatment today. I might mention the thoracoplasty that everyone talks about like it was some horrific torture. It is still used for extreme cases of scoliosis today as well.
I have no idea what that is. Can you just explain what exactly is done on that?
With the thoracoplasty?
Yeah, if you can explain what I don't know exactly what that is. It sounds interesting. Can you tell us exactly what happened?
They would slice the patient open on the side, and they would remove ribs, usually two or three ribs at a time, and use the chest muscles to permanently collapse the lung if it was too far gone to save. They might have to even have several procedures to try to get it all done, get it to where it was completely sealed off.
What was the success rate on that?
I haven't seen any actual figures. There's legends that the mortality rate was like 5%. Like I say, I haven't seen any actual figures to back that up.
Right.
In fact, from the number of people I've spoken to that had family that survived that procedure compared to the number of death certificates I've seen that list that procedure as happening shortly before the death, I'd say that that's wrong. But even if it were right, we're talking about a lung that's too far gone to save. this person had one foot in the grave already. They would be dead if they didn't have that surgery. So even if they only saved 5 out of every 100, or even if it was 1 out of every 100, that was still lives that were saved that would have certainly been dead without the procedure. So I don't think it's really the horror story that people have made it out to be.
Right.
Now, I've heard this is either a myth or a legend that during a lot of the surgeries, they didn't use anesthesia on the patients. Is that true? Is it wrong?
During the surgeries, I'm sure that they did. The artificial pneumothorax, they didn't, and they couldn't. The reason that they couldn't is because if they were to anesthetize them, they would relax too much, and it would relax the lungs, and there would be too much of a chance of actually puncturing the lung and causing permanent damage. Huh. So they couldn't anesthetize them on that procedure.
Let me ask you a quick question, John. Now, this was an EVP that I got at Waverly when we were up there. It was the Moan, and I don't know if you'd heard that one or not, but I'm trying to recall exactly where I was at. It was on the third floor. If you come up the steps, it's the first room on your right at the end.
Isn't that the minor surgery? I thought that was
minor surgery or something. I know that it's always a lot of water on the floor there. I do know that.
On which floor was that now?
It's on the third floor.
On the third floor, you go up the stairs.
First room on your right.
By the morgue?
No, it's the other stairwell. I'm trying to think. I just know it was beside the stairwell. It's the first door on the right, and if you walk on around to the right, there's a bathrooms that were there. And then on around the next little bit, there's a large room, like a recovery type room.
Okay.
I'm trying to...
I'm not sure exactly where that was.
I think it's the east end, the last room
on
the right.
Yeah. The last room on the right, yes.
Last room on the right.
I think it was called a minor surgery room, maybe.
Is it where on the second floor they have the little balcony?
No, it's on the third.
Is it attached to the solarium?
No, it's on the third floor.
It's right below the fourth floor surgery room.
Yeah, it's right exactly the same area.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was a ward.
Okay, because I got an EVP there of a horrendous moan. I thought it was a small surgery room or something because it was straight under the fourth floor surgery room.
No, the minor surgery is where they did the artificial pneumothorax, which would be down right next to the kitchenette.
Okay.
Right at the curve of the building.
Now, we do have a question from Don in the chat room, and your wife has answered it, but... While on tour, I had a guy tell us that you know, the morgue table, which is on the first floor, was it rigged for the MTV Fear series? Is this true? And if it is it still rigged?
It wasn't MTV Fear. That was Scariest Places on Earth. And yes, they had and I don't know if MTV Fear, Scariest Places had anything to do with it or not. I know that the owner's son was doing it as a prank on his sister. Put a hole through the wall into the room next to it where some people have mistakenly claimed it was the autopsy room with the raised little platform in the corner. I don't know if you know where I'm talking about, but right next to the morgue, there's a room with tile walls and has some drains on the floor. That was the refrigeration equipment room. And the brother had put a hole through the wall, put a piece of rebar through, and I think he might have even tack welded it. And he's the one that pushed it and scared his sister and her friends. I don't know if the TV show had anything to do with that or not.
Now, we discussed the fifth floor and the fourth floor. Is there any legends or is there any historical information you can let us know about the third floor?
Third floor, we have an autobiography written by a doctor who was assistant medical director for part of the time while he worked at Waverly. He worked there for 10 years, and for 5 of the years he was assistant medical director. And before he became assistant medical director, he states in his autobiography that he worked on the third floor and that was the ward that was the housing for the patients with far advanced cases. In fact, we have his signature on a lot of death certificates where the cause was far advanced cases of pulmonary tuberculosis to back up this. So that was apparently the floor, and there's been several former patients that said that the third floor is where they sent people that didn't really have a whole lot of chance of survival.
Okay.
With your death certificates that you found, have you found that, is that the floor where you had the most deaths that you have recorded?
It doesn't say, unfortunately, which floors they were on. I'd say it's pretty high. It's pretty high in that area. The only way that I can really tell is by which doctor signed the death certificates. And you can't completely go by that either, because they rotated on the who was going to take care of that. The doctor even speaks in his autobiography about a weekend that he was the one that was on call, and they had, I think, four deaths, which, again, counters the legends of a death an hour. He also states in his autobiography that he worked there during the worst year in the history of the hospital for deaths, and in the autobiography it says it was 152 deaths. We found that in 1945 there were 162 deaths, which I think it's just a simple typographical error. It's the middle digit is off by one. I think he might have just hit the five instead of the six, but it's very consistent with what he was saying. And it says that it was at the end of World War II when a lot of troops were coming back with far advanced cases.
Now, were the troops during World War II, were they getting tuberculosis? You might know this, you might not. Were they getting tuberculosis while being over in Europe fighting the war?
I believe that, I'm not sure exactly how it started, but any time that you have people in close quarters, especially if there's not the greatest sanitary conditions, you're going to have a higher transfer rate. A lot of prisons right now have a problem with tuberculosis. The problem's not gone. Third world countries still have problems with it. In fact, there's resistant strains that antibiotics don't treat anymore. So
it had
more to do with them, the way they were housed and kept in close quarters overseas, and the fact that they didn't have access to adequate medical treatment and get diagnosed in the earliest possible stages, so it was more treatable.
Now with the troops coming back and having the tuberculosis, was the government paying for their care, or were they just thrown on the street and said sorry?
Well, Waverly Hills was a local-run facility. It wasn't a state facility. It was owned and operated by the Louisville Board Tuberculosis Hospital, and it was funded by taxes on Louisville and Jefferson County. So it was for patients. It was for anybody from Jefferson County. They had a lot of people come from elsewhere. They had to change the rules at several points to make it to where people that didn't live in Jefferson County for a certain amount of time couldn't go, because they were filling up with people importing from other areas. But for the most part, it was free for anybody from the Jefferson County area.
Okay. We just talked about the third floor. What about the second floor? Is there any legends, or can you give us some historical information about the second floor?
The second floor was just your general housing. There wasn't anything really special with that. We do know that the corner room, if you go up the stairs right next to the morgue, get to the second floor and turn left, that corner room that has the little balcony that overlooks the parking lot, we do know that that room was used as a chapel.
Okay.
But that's about all we know.
Now, what about around the on the first floor, the wing where the gift shop was? What were the other rooms down through there?
You had, from the lobby coming in, you had an area where they had the telephone equipment and switchboard, and where they did some of the records. They have file room. It's more like a vault where they stored records.
Okay.
And then you had the medical director's office, went into x-ray, the x-ray department with its dressing rooms, waiting rooms, reading rooms, and dark room and all that. And on into occupational therapy. That pretty much covers the back side of the building.
Now, if you're...
I'm sorry?
If you're coming from the lobby,
mm-hmm.
and before you make the turn toward the stairs at the end of that hallway, mm-hmm. the last room on your right, what was that? Do you know what that was? before you make the turn around the curve.
Last room on the right.
Because that's where Kurt and I were seeing shadows in there.
There's a whole bunch of... I know they got it filled with a whole bunch of...
Lumber now.
Yeah, the whole bunch of construction equipment now.
Let's see. Oh, I wish I hadn't closed that. I accidentally closed out. I have the mechanical drawings, and I had it pulled up on my screen not too long ago.
Okay.
That sounds like it was right in the area of the X-ray.
Okay.
But I'm not positive on that.
Okay.
I mean, I'm sure everyone's dying to hear. I mean, there's been rumors about the electroshock therapy room. You know how? I think you actually posted some pictures with an old circuit breaker, I believe.
Right.
That was in. I mean, there's a legend about there's an electric shock therapy room. Now that's not true, is it?
Absolutely not. That really kind of caught me. First time I heard that, why would anybody even use electroshock therapy in a tuberculosis hospital? And that was around the same time that there were still rumors that there was a mental ward and that mental patients killed the nurse. And that whole area back through that wing is a staff-only area. There wouldn't have been patients brought back there. Mm-hmm. Right next to the room in question, I believe, was the library, where books were stored and brought out on carts to the patients. Right across is all your cold storage for your food and the steward's storage room and the loading dock and all that. There was no areas back there that they would even bring patients to. So it never really even made sense. And if you look at that panel, it says plain as day, pump, old boiler, new boiler. It was obviously
mechanical room.
Either a fuse panel for the boiler system, or if there was any truth to it, that it was light bulbs and it may be an indicator, and maybe that was a maintenance office or something.
Okay.
It sounds like someone was just trying to start a legend like that so they can get notoriety. I started a legend at Waverly Hills. That's what it sounds like.
That's a possibility. There's lots of stories like that, like the bleeding room.
I was actually going to ask you about that next.
Yeah, the story was that they would hang up bodies upside down and slice them open to drain the blood, the infected blood. And the reason they would do that is because the blood was too dangerous to let get off the hill. So they just let it drain down into the septic system. That doesn't make any sense right off the get-go. Then I got to looking at things, and the room in question is right next to power distribution. That would be a warm area. If they were going to do something like that, which it's not likely that would happen anyway, but if they were, wouldn't that be more like in a cold storage area, which is way down the hall? And if you look at the door closely, it's clearly stamped fire protection or fire door. I got the mechanical drawings, and it clearly states that that was a transformer room, which fits with everything else that we were finding about the place.
Now, we have a question from our chat room. Casper Boyne wants to know, what's your favorite room? Not your favorite room, I can't see tonight. Favorite floor, I apologize. And if you want to say a favorite room, you can answer that too.
Let's see. I've had some interesting times on the second floor. Far room on the second floor, if you go all the way to the west wing by the fire escape, on the back side of the building, it was a small ward. And we used to post up there and watch for trespassers, me and a friend. And we had some interesting times in there.
Okay.
One night it was hot, muggy, no breeze whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Miserable hot in there, even at 1 o'clock in the morning. And my friend turned and being a smart aleck, he said, I wish our friends would give us some paranormal air conditioning. And no sooner than he said that, cold air started pouring in from the hallway.
Oh,
we looked
man.
At the door, looked at each other, looked back at the door, said thanks, and went back to watching for trespassers.
We've got another question from the chat room from Marla. And
yep.
She wants to know, have any books about Waverly been written, like memoirs of workers or patients?
The only thing factual that I know of is the chapter in that autobiography written by Dr. Stewart. Other than that, there's been some ghost books about ghosts of Louisville that have mentioned the place, but they basically go off of the well-known legends. And that's unfortunate. Like I've mentioned several other times, a lot of people in the paranormal field will look to see what they can find on a place, and the first thing you're going to come across are the legends. And some of them are long-standing, well-believed legends, but that doesn't mean they're any more true. And I think it's way too often overlooked doing good, sound research to see if there's any truth to back up these stories.
Now, we haven't mentioned the death tunnel yet. Can you give us information about the death tunnel, when it was built, why, what it was used for, if there's any legends or myths about it?
I think it was in 1928 that it was opened. I'd have to double-check on that. But it was made for bringing supplies up from the railroad spur. It was only later that they decided that they could use it to bring bodies out of the hospital to avoid the other patients seeing it. It had a small rail system on the right-hand side, the ramp side, and they had like a mine cart that would be raised and lowered, bringing supplies up and down from the railroad spur at the bottom. And they had, I guess, a table that they would attach to the top of it and place bodies on it and lower it down. In fact, had an amusing story. We spoke with one of the medical directors for a long time was Dr. Miller, and his son Milton Miller, Dr. Milton Miller, came up and spoke with several of the guards, and he was telling us stories that he remembered from growing up on the hill, where he would go out to the old trash pile and shoot rats and different little things that they did as kids. And he told me about how his brothers once in a while would go into the tunnel. One of them would lay down on the table and cover up with a sheet. The other brother would lower the mine cart down, and when he got to the bottom and the worker down at the bottom went to remove the body, he'd sit up and scare him.
That sounds like something David or I would have done.
That's something I would have done. Now we do have another question. Marla had put a comment in here, and she wants to know, has there been any, like a diary or a journal of any patients been found?
Nothing that I've ever heard of. I sure wish that there were. That'd be awesome.
Yes, it would. Yeah.
What about like I know you mentioned that you have a collection of Waverly Hill or the newsletter, the Waverly Herald. How many actual, do you have actual copies of that, I guess it's a newspaper that was published there?
The Waverly Herald was a newsletter that was put out for the patients and for the staff, because even the staff lived up on the hill. I believe the story was that a woman who was a patient was coming back after she recovered and visiting some friends, and they were always bombarding her with questions of what was going on in the outside world because they felt so separated from everything, and she came up with the idea for the Waverly Herald.
Now, do you have actual copies of that?
It's mostly pages, bits and pieces. I think I have one intact with all of the pages. And I also have, there was a history, detailed history of Waverly Hills that was done in installments. And I have the whole history of Waverly Hills that came from the Waverly Herald.
Wow.
Now, if time came in, let's say, a TV network came to you and they wanted your help on like doing a documentary on for the history, the history of Waverly Hills, would you help them out there?
Absolutely. That's why I'm trying to put all of this information on the internet for everyone to access for free. There's been so many people that's been so possessive about the things that they found on Waverly, and I don't understand that. I have more respect than that for the people that were there. That's not my information. The piles of stuff that I've gotten, even though I've put a lot of money and time into getting it, it's not my information, it's their information. And their stories want to be told. Mm-hmm. So I absolutely am willing to share anything that I have with anybody.
It's like the paranormal community. Everyone, you know, it's like any evidence that we find, we like to share and we like to discuss.
Absolutely.
With everyone. I thank you very much for what you're doing. I mean, you spend a lot of time, and like you said, you know, money. I give you a big round of applause just for what you're doing. It's amazing. Do you have anyone that's helping you? I mean, it seems like it'd be a tough choice. I know your wife helps you, but do you have anybody else that helps you with like documenting the history of Waverly Hills?
We get bits and pieces from lots of people. I've had Ron, who ran the old website for WaverlyHillsTBSanatorium.com. He shared information with me, and I've shared information with him as well. My wife's a huge help. She gets on there and goes through the death certificates. God, I don't know how she has the patience to go through it. It could take a week or more. On your average year, if you just pull up the Jefferson County deaths for a certain year, it's going to usually be between 5,000 and 7,000 certificates to have to go through looking for any hint that it was from Waverly Hills. And she's done a huge part of that. We went out, like I said, with Pam Brooks, and she's helped out as well. She runs the memorial that I sent the link, put the link into the board on. She runs that. She owns the new one, the official one, and I help her maintain that somewhat.
That's awesome. You know, I thank you to everyone who's helping you out. I mean, that's what you guys are doing is great.
Right.
I believe I have a question for my wife who's listening downstairs, and then mm-hmm. Tom has a question. My wife wants to know, it's a general research question, what's the best way to find credible info when searching a site other than searching through tons of death certificates? Would newspapers be good sources of info? And where else can people look to get credible information on research?
Local libraries is huge. Most local libraries are going to have a research group that knows a lot about what has happened, and you can find a lot of historical facts about the place there, usually in their reference section, or they might have a genealogy section in the library, so that's a big place for it. Another thing is to, and it might be different in different states, but if you go to find where they do the deed room and look through deeds on the property and find out who owned the place, that's a lot of good information there. There might be legends of a sailor that died in a certain house that still haunts it, and if you look through the deeds, you find that nobody fit in that description ever lived there, and there's your answer to the question. Just any place that you can find real documentation, real facts, and anybody could put anything on a web page, unfortunately.
Right. And I believe Tom had a question from his wife.
From my lovely wife, Bobby. She wants to know, and it's a good question, how many children's death certificates have you located?
Haven't gone through and done the figures on that. I need to. We have two different databases. We use Open Office Writer, basically the same as Excel. And on one of them, we put the names in alphabetical order and a basic reference of where we got the name from. We might have, like if it was a death certificate, we'll have the death certificate number and the date of death on there. That's just for easy reference of looking by name. Then in another one, we take all of the information that we can get off of the death certificate and we put it in order of the date of death. That's how we work up our statistics on what percent was white or black, male or female, average age at the time of death, average length of stay from the time they were admitted to the time that they died. But we haven't sat down and worked out any figures on by age. I'd love to do that and do a section that's dedicated just to the children, and I'm sure that'll eventually be in the works. We're closing in on actually having all of the death certificates that we can possibly get until we get access to more. 1953 is as far as we can go right now, unfortunately, so that leaves a blank all the way up to 1961. But the death rate had already dropped drastically by the time it got into the 50s. So the number that we're going to be missing is way low. Right. 1953, there were 65 deaths. 1952, it was 79. So there's probably going to be between 75 and 50 on average deaths per year from 53 on to 61.
Okay. Now, did TB, you know, with the data that you're collecting, did tuberculosis, did more people, did white people or black people, what did TB affect the most? Did more black people die or did more white people die?
Percentage-wise, from everything that I've seen, more black people died from it. From what I've got for Waverly Hills so far entered in, 927 of what we have entered were black compared to 1,382 that were white. Now, that's only a little over 2,300 that we have in that database. We have them all in names, but not in the other database yet. So roughly 40% were black, 60% were white, 62% were male. So, but I don't know if that's because the population, I don't know what the figures were as far as what was the black population compared to the white population in Louisville at that time.
Okay.
That's probably a big basis on it.
Now, what about the time when it was a nursing home or something like that? Do you have any death certificates from that time frame?
No, I don't have anything from that time frame. Like I say, it's only public record up to 1953, kind of like with census information.
Right.
It has to be so far in the past before it's considered public record.
Correct.
For privacy reasons. Mm-hmm. So we don't have access to all that stuff yet. Unfortunately, I'd love to be able to start working on that part too.
Before they release the information, how long?
I'm not sure with the death certificates. When we first started looking into this, I believe it went up to 1951. Now they have it available on Ancestry up to 1953, and I believe I've seen somewhere that you can buy the microfilm for 54 and maybe 55. I think it's a couple hundred dollars for a microfilm, plus we'd have to either buy or locate a microfilm viewer to be able to even use it if we were to invest in that part of it. So we're just working on what we can get access to for right now.
Now, when did Waverly Hills officially close?
In 61. I'm not sure exactly what the date was, but it was in 61.
Okay, and what's been the history since, like, 1961 to now? Has the building, since 1961, has the building ever been used for anything else?
'63 is when it became the nursing home. That closed in, I've seen conflicting dates, 81 and 82. I think it basically closed in 81, but they still hadn't cleared everyone out until 82. But when it was finally cleared out, nobody used it for anything. There were a lot of ideas. I believe the first idea that, or at least one of the first ideas that came up, was it was bought by some people who wanted to make it into the first private-run prison in the country. The community was up in arms about that, so it was denied. Some of the staff members, I believe Dr. Sievers was one of them, that worked at the nursing home, he wanted to reopen it as a nursing home again, or they discussed it being a home for mentally retarded. There's been a lot of ideas. I've even seen where it was written up with a little shopping district down at the bottom of the hill.
I know there's a golf course there now,
right.
The entrance to it. What about... Now, I know there was a previous owner before the Maddenleys owned it that he tried to, like, condemn the building and tear it down. Is that true?
From my understanding, Bob Albertaski bought the place, and he tore down the old nurse's dorm, and he planned on building the world's biggest statue of Christ and wanted to make a Christian retreat center up there.
Mm-hmm.
And at first... From everything I've seen, he wanted to just leave the main building alone and possibly use it in a later stage. But there was an ongoing problem with people breaking in. Trespassers have always been rampant. I've seen plenty of things where the city was getting on them because as fast as he could board up the windows, he'd come back the next day and they'd been torn open again for kids going in there to party. So... he kept getting threats that if he didn't take care of it, that the city would take care of it and then bill him for it. And I think he just finally got sick of all of it. And when things fell through and he couldn't get the funding for his statue of Christ the Redeemer, that's around the time that he had somebody dig the dirt away from the West Wing and try to destabilize the building. I think it's when he was just disgusted with the whole idea. That's around the time that he put it on sale on eBay. I believe it was for about $250,000.
Uh-huh. Now, wasn't the statue that he wanted to build the same one that's, I believe, that's on that cliff in Sao Paulo, Brazil?
I believe so. It was going to be, I believe, even bigger than that. I think it was going to be about the same statue, but it was going to be standing on a huge globe. Mm-hmm. So it was supposed to be even bigger than that.
Wow. And what do you think of Waverly now? With the Manleys running it and the donations that they're doing, they're, with the restoration of Waverly. Mm-hmm. What's your opinion on that? Is that, are you happy to see that they're restoring Waverly?
Absolutely. I have no doubt that the building would be gone by now if it hadn't been for the Mattinglys stepping in. The money that they've raised and they've put a lot on the line for it, to try to save a building that Charlie's father worked at and remembered fondly, just trying to save a historical site, and I really commend them for that. I know that it would be gone if it wasn't for them. But the damage was just so far gone.
Right. What about the asbestos that was in there? I mean, I say that took quite a bit to get that stuff out of there.
I'm sure it did, and I'm sure there probably is still some on the inside walls. I believe everything that's still encased is okay. I could be wrong. I haven't really spoken with Charlie on the specifics of it, but I think that as long as it's encased inside the wall, it's fine. It's just anything okay. That was exposed that had to be removed,
right.
Which really a lot of the pipes had already been stripped out by people trying to find something to sell for scrap.
Right.
So a majority of the problem was residual, and I think, I could be wrong, that either Charlie had Albert Haskey's son, who was certified with asbestos, either come in and help him with it, or to train Charlie and get Charlie certified so that he could do it himself. I'm not sure exactly how that worked, but I'm sure it took a lot of time and effort to get it done.
I know at the old Paris TB Hospital, that is asbestos heaven there.
Big time.
Big time.
I mean, it's a
mini it's Waverly.
Definitely. Now you mentioned, I mean, we discussed Waverly for an hour, but you did mention that, you know, I'm interested in this subject, the gates of hell. You mentioned that you have some information on the gates of hell. What can you give our listeners? What information can you give them?
I think we lost him, Kurt.
Yep, we did lose him. We'll try to get. We're gonna, Jim, if you're still there, we're gonna call you right back, and we'll get to your question too, Marla.
Thomas has privacy director, and the name you have reported is too short. Your recording must be at least 1 second long. At the tone, say your name or the company you represent.
When you have Tommy Jones.
One.
Kurt loves Orbs Incorporated.
Now trying to connect.
There you go. See, they know you, Kurt.
We don't have the other two shows are listed, but they're not scheduled to start till sometime in June. I don't know exactly when.
Connecting. Right. Please wait.
Yeah, he answered the question. No, Kurt's the only one on tonight.
Connecting.
No.
We're calling back, Jam. We're calling back, Jamkey.
Connecting. The party you are calling is not available. Please try your call again later.
We're going to try to call. We are.
Let me call again.
Back.
Let me call him again.
I want to get some information about the gates of hell.
And does not accept unidentified calls. At the tone, say your name or the company you represent. When you have finished, please press 1.
Kurt loves Orbs.
Don't forget to press 1.
Now trying to connect. Please hold. Connecting.
Please wait. Connecting.
Hello.
Hey, we're back.
Sorry, we're back. That's okay. I think we lost you on our end. I think we were, if I can remember right, you did answer Marla's question in the chat room. Is Waverly Hills a historic place?
Yes.
Okay. And then I want to, I mean, you had mentioned this before that you have some information on the Gates of Hell. I think it's a cemetery, but what can you give our listeners about the Gates of Hell?
When we first started looking into the place, we went out there and the grass was chest high, headstones broke all over the place, beer cans and used condoms. It was a party place, unfortunately. We coordinated a volunteer cleanup, and we had members from five different paranormal research teams come out. And somebody cut the grass before we got there, but my wife and daughter wrote down the inscriptions from all the headstones, and we entered that on findagrave.com, so if more headstones are destroyed, the information won't be lost forever.
That's awesome.
Picked up trash and basically gave the place a little bit of respect that it's been long past due. When we first started looking into getting permission to go out and investigate, the place is outside of Hardin County. You have to go through Hardin County to get there, but it's actually in Breckinridge County, right across the county line on a gravel road. So there's a jurisdictional issue. It's maintained by the state police now. And when we contacted the state police to try to get permission, we asked them what the real name was, and they even only knew it as the Gates of Hell. We did find out that it was also known as Grandview Cemetery, uh-huh. and started out as the Casey Family Cemetery. And not long after we did that cleanup, which was covered by Wave 3 and Fox 41 News, as well as the Courier Journal, we were contacted by descendants of the Casey family that thanked us for the work that we did out there. And we actually went back to do several more cleanups with members of the Casey family.
That's awesome. Thank you. I mean, that's cool. I need to do a quick shout out to Reverend Tim. He owns the Reverend Tim's Voodoo Shop. He's in the chat room tonight. Welcome to the Paranormal Divide, Reverend Tim, and thank you for showing up tonight and listening to the show.
All the way from New York.
Wow, that's cool what you did with the cemetery. Now, do you think? Have you personally been on any paranormal investigations out at the Gates of Hell?
Yeah, we did an all-night investigation there one time, and we've had some interesting things happen. In fact, let's go ahead and take care of the orb question that comes up all the time.
That's my question.
One interesting occasion, it was, I believe, the same night that we did the cleanup. We stayed and did an investigation that night after the news crews left, which the news crews both got a their first taste of EVP that day as well. Anyway, later on that night, I think it was, we were doing the investigation, and we were back inside in the tree area at the back of the cemetery, and our friend Pam was using dowsing rods and experimenting with those, and my wife was nearby, and all of a sudden, my wife just started crying, and of course, we pay attention to everything that happens that's odd, and this just came on her all of a sudden. So we watched, and I think it was like a minute and a half. I can't remember the exact time. And just thought it was interesting. And she was kind of spooked from it and wanted to leave, so that kind of helped end that investigation. But we found out later on, the next week, that a friend of ours that was with us had his video camera on a tripod, and it happened to be pointing in that direction at the time. Mm-hmm. And he sent us a copy of it, and just before she started crying, a bright orb went into her abdominal area and disappeared. And right around the time she stopped, it came out of her armpit, and it wasn't as bright anymore.
Wow.
So that's one of the rare occasions that I really question it and wonder if there was something to it. Most orbs, I think, is just dust or a bug, but that one's got me kind of stumped.
I totally. I mean, there, you know, like you say, most orbs are, you know, dust orbs, but there are instances out there that there, you know, there's true orbs out there that are really orbs. You know?
Right.
And Tomkin mentioned that because he's got a orb that he caught on video that was coming out of his pocket at Old Paris TV Hospital, if I'm correct.
No, that was at a private residence.
I apologize. I was wrong.
No problem. Let me ask you a question. Is the cemetery, is it public or private?
It's privately owned. From what we trace back, that it was a retired doctor that only lives in Kentucky part of the year. He lives in Colorado the rest of the year. And when we contacted him to ask him for permission, he denies ownership of the place. I don't know if it's because he doesn't want any liability issues or if he doesn't want to be hassled, but it's contradictory to the deed information that we found, but he claims that he has nothing to do with it, that he owns the land adjacent to it. So I'm not sure exactly what the deal is. So we've always gotten permission from the state police, since they're the ones that watch the place and let them know that we're going to be there, and we're always sure to let them know when we leave, just as a courtesy thing and to make sure that we're not blamed for something that happens after we're gone.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Would you classify as that the Gates of Hell as being haunted or very active paranormally?
It's hard. I don't know, it depends on the definition thing. Definitely paranormal. A lot of things that I can't explain for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Cannot argue that at all. But I can't say that I've encountered anything that I would say is definitely the soul of someone that stayed behind. I don't know if it's more along the lines of a residual, possibly. It's really hard to explain it, and it goes into different definitions. But definitely paranormally active.
What about Waverly Hills? How would you classify that? Would you call that a haunted place or the same thing, paranormally active?
I'd say the same. I don't think I've seen anything in my life that I could say definitively. There's things that I believe might be very well attributed to a haunting, a soul that stayed behind. But nothing that I could say for sure is. One thing that I've learned with all the things that I've seen in my life is I don't know squat. All I can do is kind of speculate and guess based on what I've seen, and I've come across a lot that can't be explained, things that lean towards something, but nothing that I can say is definite proof.
Now, do you belong to, are you a member of any paranormal group or society?
Not at this time. I was co-founder of Kentucky Society for Ghost Research, and that's the group that I was involved in while we were at Waverly and doing the things out of Grandview. Unfortunately, I had to move to Washington for 6 months for family issues, and during that time, the group split up, and there's a part of the group has made another group that's based out of Louisville that Pam Brooks, that helps me out a lot, is involved with. It's called Kentucky Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
They're an offshoot from Kentucky Society for Ghost Research, but I'm currently not involved in anything. I work at a prison, and really I don't have the time to put into it. I wish I did. I miss it a lot.
Excellent. Do you have any other information you want to give our listeners tonight about Waverly that we haven't discussed, or even the Gates of Hell? Is there any other information you'd like to give to our listeners?
Well, like I said before, I used to give tours at Waverly. I could talk about Waverly for hours. I know I've gotten kind of long-winded on here a few times.
No, it's awesome.
It's awesome.
I mean, I've learned a lot just in the hour and 10 minutes that we've talked about the stuff. I've learned a lot just about Waverly. I always like to go back and listen to my podcast because the information, I mean, it's totally awesome. I mean, I want people to, and that's the goal of my show, is I want people to learn, you know, and get information, and this is tremendous. This helps tremendously, you know. I want people to learn about Waverly.
Absolutely.
And with you being on here, I really appreciate it. It's awesome.
Well, thank you for having me. A few things that I used to like to point out on the tours. Waverly Hills, anybody whose family is from the Louisville area for several generations can almost guarantee that they could trace back one of their relatives that was either a patient at Waverly, worked at Waverly, maybe sang Christmas carols to the patients. It touched almost everybody's life. It's a huge part of the community. I grew up in California, and I've traced back a few of my distant relatives that might have been at Waverly. I don't know for sure. So it's a huge part of so many people's lives. It's a big part of everyone's history. Louisville is huge on all the new medical science, and not long ago they had the AmniCord or artificial heart implant, and they bragged about how they were on the cutting edge of medical science, and now researchers will come from all over to do research in Louisville. This building represents that Louisville's held that title almost 100 years. The original Waverly Hills opened in 1910. We're coming up on the 100-year anniversary, and that was the cutting edge of medical science. It's something that the community should take pride in.
Cool.
And really come to understand.
Definitely. That's awesome. Now, do you think they'll have a celebration when it comes up to 100 years? Do you think there will be a big celebration just to commemorate that moment?
I sure hope so. I don't doubt that Tina and Charlie will probably do something for it, but I'd sure like to see a big celebration over it.
That would be. I mean, I'm sure they would draw a lot of people, especially in the paranormal community, that would come up there just for that event. I couldn't imagine how many people. I think every person in the community would be there just to commemorate that.
Absolutely.
Now, John, do you have, if you want to go ahead and we're going to wrap the show up tonight, if you want to plug yourself, any websites that you have, anything else that you want to talk about, that'd be great.
That pretty much covers it. I've given a link, and I can give it to you again, or even post it in the message board, link to the memorial site, and we always welcome information. If somebody that's listening has a relative or has information about somebody that was a patient there that we don't have any information on, I collect as much information as I can, and I've had so many people contact me looking for information about a relative, and sometimes it's a hit, sometimes it's not, but if I do have any information, I always gladly share it with anybody.
Excellent. And if you could, I believe if you could post your websites to the Parax forum, that'd be excellent. And I'll mention it again. Please visit the Parax forums, and John will post his websites with all the information that he's collected, and it'll be available there. If you could do that, John, that'd be awesome.
Absolutely.
And John, I want to thank you very, very much for being on the Paranormal Divide. I really appreciate you taking time out from your Monday evening and spending time with us here on Parax. I truly appreciate what you're doing. Is awesome. If I could ever help out, or if you ever need anything, feel free to call me. I just want to say thank you very much again. And for tonight, we're going to have you hang up, but I'll call you right back after the show. That way I can personally thank you for being on the show.
I'd love to be able to share the real facts about the place, and thank you for giving me an opening to be able to do that.
Oh, our pleasure.
And I for a future show, I mean, I'm sure we haven't gone over everything. I'm going to invite you back on to the Paranormal Divide. If you'd come back on, that'd be awesome.
Anytime.
Cool.
Sweet. And I'll give you a call back here, John, here in a few minutes after the show's over to personally thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much for being here tonight, John.
Well, thank you. Good night.
All right, folks, what another great episode of the Paranormal Divide tonight. I mean, John Amerine, what an awesome, awesome person. The research he's doing, the time he's spending, if everyone could just give him a big round of applause, that'd be awesome. And the podcast will be up tomorrow sometime. I will have a banner for it, too. It should be available tomorrow if you hit the show archives. And I believe this should be in replay sometime. It should replay again tomorrow. If anyone has any question in regards to Waverly Hills, if they have a question about history, all that, you should be able to. He's going to post the information on the forum. If not, you can email me personally, and I will get the message to John for you. Thank you again. I want to thank Tom for being a special co-host tonight. He's been awesome.
My pleasure, man.
my paranormal brother.
Exactly. My paranormal brother. That's, you coined the phrase now.
You coined that phrase, not me. actually, this is one of your words, fantabulous.
Fantabulous, that's right. It was a fantabulous show. It was great.
And great show. Just to let everyone know, next week I do have Adam from New Age Paranormal that'll be on my show.
That'll be a good one as well.
Definitely. You talk about a neat person. He's got some neat stuff to talk about, and he's very informative. He's going to be fun. Have your questions ready. We'll see you next Monday night. Take care, and we're out of here.
Bye, guys.
This has been a production of the Para-X Radio Network.
You've been listening to The Paranormal Divide with Kurt Smith, brought to you by the Peach State Paranormal Society. Be sure to join us next time as we cross into the Paranormal Divide on your source for everything paranormal, Para-X. Any use or rebroadcast of this show without written permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2008.
Hi, this is Barney Fitzgerald from GHI, and you're listening to the...